Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome. Today's podcast dives deep on a really diverse range of topics with Stuart Jenner, who's the General Manager of Capability and Culture at Gold Road Resources. Exciting time for his organisation as it pioneers the development of what is Australia's newest gold field. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Stuart.
Thanks, Tara. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Do you mind getting us started by giving everyone who's listening an overview of Gold Road Resources?
Yes, certainly. So Gold Road Resources Limited is a mid-tier Australian gold producer. We've got our tier one mine Gruyere and our exploration projects in the underexplored, highly prospective Yamana Belt in Western Australia, which is 200 kilometres northeast of Laverton. We've got a 50% joint venture in Gruyere with Goldfields, and we first poured gold in June last year. It's a great success story is Gruyere. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware of it. In addition to Gruyere joint venture, we've got 100% of tenements, roughly covering about 4,500 square kilometres across the Yamana Belt. We've got a 50-person exploration camp at Yamana. We've also got a farm-in joint venture with Cygnus Gold down the southwest of WA called our Yandina Project.
Wow, exciting times. And I'd really like for you to give our listeners some background about you and your role and what you focus on as the General Manager for Capability and Culture.
My background, strange one. My first degree was a software engineer where the dollars were great, but the job satisfaction wasn't. So I gave that away and joined the Royal Australian Air Force as an officer where I served around Australia and overseas. And I think it was there that really set me up from a leadership perspective, experience perspective at such a younger age to enable me to have some of the opportunities that I've had later, especially in the mining and resources industry. So after I left the Air Force, I did some consulting for a while across a variety of industries and government, and then consulting into mining in sort of 2007. I worked with companies then on the payroll and left the consulting world and worked with principal miners such as St Barbara and Newcrest, worked with mining services providers such as Emeco. I started at Gold Road in 2017. Where I've got a bit of a mixed portfolio. My division includes strategy coordination, people and culture, health, safety, environment and security, enterprise risk, and soon to be information, communication, technology, which always comes back to haunt me.
I was just going to say, back to the future.
Yeah, it appears that sometimes CEOs read too much into my CV and find out that I've got that software engineering IT background, then all of a sudden this other function comes my way, so...
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your service and your time in the Navy. And it sounds like you've had a really interesting career to date. And thanks also for giving us an overview of what's happening with Gold Road. It sounds really exciting time for you as an organisation. And as you pioneer the development of what is Australia's newest gold field, can you tell us some of the overall things you're doing in your role in creating really a productive and engaged workforce with this really exciting time you're going through?
Yeah, obviously at the moment we've got this exciting time that we are in, and also this uncertain time as well, obviously with the sort of global landscape with the COVID-19 pandemic. We are doing similar things to our peers and also trying to be different as well. We try and bring things back to sort of the basics and simplicity where we can. And four employee questions that we quite often use to guide ourselves are, you know, if we can answer these, you know, where is the company heading? You know, that strategic direction of the business that people want to know and then can sort of align that meaning and purpose to. What is my role? How am I performing in my role? And then what's my future? You know, what are my future career opportunities? You know, if you can answer those four questions, and you know, if we can enable our leaders in the business to have those questions for their people, it certainly sort of sets us up for success. You know, fundamentally as well around that leadership piece. You know, we invest in our leaders from the front line all the way through to ensure that they can be the best that they can be. Have we totally solved that puzzle yet? No, but you know, it is the journey, and I think every organisation, you know, I'd question any organisation that says they've got it perfectly right and they can and take their foot off the pedal with that one. I think other keys are, you know, fun and enjoyment. You know, people need to believe in, you know, where you're going as an organisation and what they're doing, and have that sort of meaning and purpose alignment, and ultimately enjoy what they do.
A fantastic approach, and concur that everybody that I speak to through this podcast and also through AMA membership is that it's never a set and forget, as you mentioned, that would challenge anyone to say that they've got that piece nutted and solved. Do you do anything different or unique from a Gold Road perspective in terms of what benefits or offerings that you provide? It can be a pretty intense marketplace, particularly in WA, for skills. Is there anything that you guys do differently?
We certainly try and leverage our great story. I know we found Gruyere. We partnered with Goldfields in that joint venture model. We're going to find more great things and deliver great opportunities out there. So that's something that we try to leverage, is that story and the opportunity at Gold Road. One of my main reasons for joining Gold Road was it was smaller than companies that I've worked at in the past. I was after something where a company where open to new ideas and doing things differently, and opportunity to move quite quickly in an organization because it just wasn't so large. So I think at the moment with Gold Road, we are 70 people, roughly around 70 people employees for Gold Road, which is mainly our exploration and our corporate support. Obviously, we've got the mine, which is 420-odd people that's operated by Goldfields. That's employees and contractors. But with Gold Road, there's opportunities for stepping across different areas of the business that you might not necessarily get exposure to in a large business. You know, we've got technical roles with our geology team where they're not pigeonholed into a specific area of geology. They can be across and get exposure to different areas of the geological profession as well as the business. We've got, you know, some people that span a couple of organizational levels, which, you know, is good in the sense that it allows them to step up into, you know, more operational from tactical or more strategic from operational, but still also sort of keep a little bit of getting the hands dirty with some of the things that they love. We try at Gold Road, you know, our sort of modus operandi is to maintain a fairly consistent strategy with exploration that gets us through both peaks and troughs of market cycle. We don't want to be going all out when gold price is high and absolutely spending absolutely everything in exploration at that point in time, and then absolutely doing a sort of knee-jerk and cutback when the market shifts. We want to try and maintain a steady progress and exploration pipeline because we think that makes better sense to investors and the investment market, but also company viability and our people as well. Provides a little bit more certainty into what sometimes can be uncertain times of market cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Managing that volatility. Well, it certainly sounds like it's a good mixture of kind of enterprising in terms of the development opportunities, but also consistent in terms of the programs of work that you have in front of you. And I can't go without asking you, because of course, investigating you and your work experience, I notice you have experience internationally as a speaker on people capability, health and safety, leadership and organisational coaching. What do you tell people about our sector and the opportunities available in it?
Firstly, I'll just say that if you get the opportunity to ever do that, push past any fear and uncertainty and just give it a bash. I'm certainly not a professional speaker on the professional speaking circuit, but the skills that you get from just, you know, pushing through those and the networking opportunities and also just seeing things where you can be curious from a different geographical location and industry or culture certainly is a great way to expand and learn your own sort of personal and professional development. What do I say to people when I travel? I think it's first you've got to put things in perspective depending on where you're speaking. So if I speak in Europe, you really need to let them know how big things are in the in the Australian mining industry. And nothing does that better than telling them that our trucks are basically so big and their tyres are so big that it would squash your Range Rover and the operator wouldn't even know about it, you know. And that certainly gets their attention when you say that. But, you know, it's good to sort of put things in perspective of the scale of what we deal with from a mining and resources perspective. We talk about the opportunities that such a rich and diverse opportunities with careers and occupations in the mining industry in Australia and resources industry. You know, we've got high levels of health and safety, and companies are committed to health and safety of their people, and that goes, you know, fits into the environmental, the social, the governance, and the sustainability side around, you know, what we want to give back to local communities, whether, you know, that's the Indigenous and traditional owners of land that we operate in, as well as sort of local towns and communities, the wider communities of capital cities, and then obviously the contribution that we make to the nation, which I think has certainly been highlighted in the last 8 months.
Definitely. And you've just touched on a couple of things in terms of people's approaches and the approach that you took. And also in researching about you, I've noticed that you've done a lot of kind of coaching and development and organisational development at lots of different levels, but predominantly in the resource and energy industry. What do you think, Stuart, is the keys to supporting and developing leaders in the resource and energy industry?
It's a great question, Tara. I think sometimes we can make things very, very complex and over complex in the leadership space. I mean, if you haven't done it lately, but if you Google leadership traits or skills or leadership development on Google, you're going to come back with a plethora of search results.
But I mean, historically, our industry's been very characteristic of getting people that are technically very good and have succeeded in their technical or their functional area and transition them to leadership. Would love you to add kind of your thoughts on that into the mix of this question.
Yeah, that's a great add. We're not isolated and alone in promoting on technical excellence and sort of closing the leadership and people management skills gap afterwards. Mm. And quite often it's after there's some complaint or issue that's in the business, some pain and challenge. Mm-hmm. But I'd bring it back to three things that, you know, was the foundation of my Air Force training, and I use them every day. Three things to being a successful leader is manage the task, build the team, and support the individual. And that is a balancing act. It's a constant balancing act. If you manage that task, you might get delivery, but you're going to annoy a lot of people or potentially burn people out. And things like mental health, they go by the wayside if you are just purely results-focused, task-driven. You know, you can't build a great team without supporting individuals. And that's knowing individuals, you know, what skills and strengths people bring to a team, and also what the individual limitations are, and making, sort of enabling the team to understand the strengths and limitations of their teammates and how they're going to perform to manage the task together while supporting that individual. And sometimes you're going to have to sort of refocus on one of those particular areas and sometimes jump quite quickly between them. But if you do successfully consider and balance those three, you're more likely to achieve those outcomes in the best way and I think be that successful leader that you talk about.
I love that mantra of three. That's such great grounding. And I also thank you for raising mental health, because I'm going to pause that because I have got a range of questions for you in that space, because obviously that's been a big challenge and also an opportunity in 2020 for organisations. But I want to talk to you a little bit more purely about health and safety from a physical perspective at the moment. It's one of your functions, including psychological self, but physical safety is something that the industry has always had as its number one purpose in terms of do no harm and sending people home to their families and their loved ones. There's a lot that changes from a legislation, regulation, but even just best practice perspective. What do you do? What do you and your team do to really keep pace with changes in the health and safety landscape?
That's another great question. What I do personally and what my team do at Gold Road is, first of all, you've got to bring a curious mindset. You have to bring that open-mindedness to it. Certainly learn from what you've done in the past. I learn from all of the successes and failures that I've had throughout my various careers. And, you know, you try not to make those mistakes again. You want them to inform you, but you don't want to just take those templates and apply it thinking, well, it worked here, therefore it must work over there. So I think that first bit is being open and curious. Have great networks and use them accordingly and appropriately. And that's not just around that confirmation bias piece. You know, you need to try and avoid that and go, well, where can I go and get some thought-provoking challenge
for my,
you know. So, you know, we've got memberships with CME and with AMEC and on in the health and safety space. You know, our team sort of cycle through the various committees, you know, to gain exposure to the thoughts and ideas of others. Be well read, but be curious when you're reading. You know, just because you're reading publications or journal articles or certain theses, you know, think about, you know, what would apply and what wouldn't apply, and how that can be furthered and made better in that continual improvement sort of piece. Professional development has its part and plays its part. Just make sure that, you know, there's a bit of a balance, I suppose. You know, sometimes institutions can be a little bit behind and lagging in their curriculum. So, you know, I personally use podcasts, books, journal articles, networking, you know, calling up peers who I know I've had some robust debate with before, deliberately calling people who I know would give me some thought-provoking, challenging questions and would definitely not be thinking what I'm thinking in a particular space. Utilize experts in the legal field and, you know, your professional memberships who put out updates. You know, we're obviously heading into the, in Western Australia, the new WHS bill is going through Parliament at the moment, approved through the lower house, and that's going to bring a whole heap of changes, and we need to be proactive and ready for those.
And I just really love the approach about being curious, because that really does, that curiosity does really blur the lines between formal professional development and ongoing professional development. Because, you know, there's research at the moment talking about what portion of our days will we all be spending learning new platforms and learning new ways to operate and engage. And I guess 2020 has been a bit of an example of that, right? We've all had to adapt and change whether we've wanted to or not. And having a curious mindset and being prepared to be challenged and forcing yourself to be challenged is such great advice. Thank you. And I've got another similar topic that is something that's everybody's really thinking about and focusing on. And I know, Emma, we're doing some work and we'll release some research soon around workforce planning, because it's a real challenge for everybody at the moment. While the gold price is riding high in recent years, that brings great opportunities to invest further in your people. It presents challenges. And I touched on potential skills challenges earlier. What kind of challenges and opportunities does the kind of circumstance that globally Australia's in, where you're at WA and specifically Gold Road, are in terms of workforce development?
From a workforce planning perspective, I think all organisations are currently having to rethink. You know, this comes back to what I said before about what we've historically done in the past has to be, you know, probably morphed and modified to the current landscape that we're in. You know, with you know, the global pandemic with COVID-19, with borders the way they are, both internationally and nationally, various commodities and the changes there and what may occur within infrastructure. So I think, you know, it's the forefront of all organisations' minds is workforce planning. So things that, you know, we're doing at the moment, I think, and again, I don't think we're any different, is it's around what opportunities exist in the talent pool now. So obviously we've got some areas and some industries that take airlines. You know, we've got pilots, we've got aircraft operations personnel, you've got cabin crew, you've got all of the support and logistic functions from airlines that have been impacted. And there's a lot of great talent out there with transferable skill sets around, you know, the leadership skill sets, the planning, the organisation, you know, communication, logistics. So how can we utilise those skills and challenge the thinking? You know, it's just because an engineer has always been in a particular role, does it need to be? You know, just because a particular type of leadership role in an exploration company has always been filled by a geologist, do they actually have to be filled by a geologist? Is that the primary value adding skill set, or is that just what we've always done? So first is, you know, what opportunities exist out there. The other thing is, we've got to be very careful that we don't repeat things that we've done in the past around ratcheting up and increasing certain salary bands, because it's a short term fix, and I think there's errors in it with what it brings to organisational pain down the track, but also the pain on talent down the track. So historically, what we've seen in this space is when labour is in short supply, you just see the salary bands all move up almost permanently. So what I've utilised in the past is what I call sort of temporary market premiums, which are, it's an increase, but it's a increase based on hard to fill and or critical talent roles. but it has an end date and it has regular reviews. Now, you might review that every 3 months or 6 months, depending on your landscape. But the conversation you've had with the particular talent is, we're doing this now to recognize the current situation we're in, but this is not open-ended. If we make the change as a permanent change, we get to the point where the market has turned. We've got a lot of overpaid people that could be crippling a business, and therefore some significant decisions have to be made. Or you're ending up with disparity where you're bringing people into the organization on a much lower salary than the ones that you've been left with historically because of this permanent change. So I think my advice out there to businesses and leaders is really think about what you do to address your labor shortage or your workforce planning with solving the problem now, but not making life difficult for you down the track.
That's a more sustainable approach to it and great advice. And another thing I'd like to ask you about is, I know that Gold Road is really, you know, leading the way in attracting more women to the resource and energy industry. Tell us some of the things that you're doing to increase female workforce participation and also in leadership areas.
Gender diversity, Gold Road, it's heading in the right direction. It's not where we want it to be. We are heading in the right direction. Current female participation is around 32%, which is above the industry average.
It is.
Yep. It's just sort of sitting around 19%. So we don't set a certain percentage target at Gold Road. We operate on the mantra of best talent for the role and to improve on our diversity performance. And that we don't just limit that to gender, and also maintaining ourselves above industry average. There's a few things there that we sort of look at rather than sort of picking this is what we want the percentage to be. So it's currently 32. Right. But we can improve. Where we can improve is, you know, female participation in sort of non-stereotypical roles. Our field services team on the exploration side, you know, has generally been very, very male dominated. So we want to, that's an area of focus for us, is to increase female participation in those roles. Leading from the top, I mean, one third of our board are female, with 50% of our non-executive directors being female. So that's great, I think, you know, for sort of leading from the board. We've got females in the executive leadership team at general manager level, as well as leadership team at senior management level. It'd be nice to see those increase. And it's certainly something that we are always monitoring. We're always, you know, my talent team is always looking at, you know, how many in the gender space as well as other areas, but looking right the way back at university level, you know, and working with universities around what is the gender makeup and diversity makeup of courses. You know, when we advertise a role, what's the breakdown from a diversity perspective of applications, and, you know, through sort of first interview, second interview. Gold Road recently took on 4 graduates at the start of this year. We maintain that. A lot of organisations temporarily paused or discontinued graduate and traineeships at the start of this year. We increased. So generally, we take on 1 to 2 graduates a year, or try to. This year, we took on 4.
Fantastic.
2 were male and 2 were 2 were female. There's a lot of focus in the diversity space. We're trying to increase our Indigenous engagement at Gold Road, Gruyere, our mining operation. With the Yilka mob and community are certainly at the forefront of our minds to make sure that we, you know, partner effectively with the traditional owners and the Yilka mob, and offer effective employment opportunities you know, where we can. But it goes wider, as you know, we've 5% roughly of our workforce are veterans from the Australian Defence Force. If you look at Defence Force from an international perspective, I think, you know, we've got international representation from a veterans perspective of about 7%. We've got a lot of one of our field service supervisors used to refer to Gold Road as almost like working for the United Nations, because we had such a wide range and diverse range of geographic representation throughout the business, which is fantastic.
Such a great compliment. But I mean, I couldn't agree more with you about the challenge in female workforce participation around those non-traditional areas, particularly trades, where we're seeing more and more employers focus on getting females in a deeper pipeline to try and change some of their traditional blue-collar roles from being predominantly male-dominated. And with your background, it makes sense in terms of focus on veterans. But, you know, we're seeing more resource and energy employers turning on to doing that because of the obvious similarities around the lifestyle and the types of conditions and things like that. So I heard that as a success story for many organisations. So wonderful for Gold Road. And I do want to talk a little bit about your operations with Gruyere and Yamana being FIFO, and due to the geographic location that you touched on, 200 k's east of Laverton in the WA goldfields, you know, particularly this year. But can you give us some indications of some of the workforce challenges that you've been facing and what you specifically and Gold Roads as an organisation have put in place to mitigate some workforce risks and challenges?
Comes down to, again, leveraging the story. Both Gold Road as a company and Gruyere as an operating site have got some very good things that can be leveraged. You know, Gold Road, yes, we found Gruyere, and we've got a very, very large greenfields exploration tenement and appetite. And Gruyere is it's the new kid on the block. It's the new gold mine. You know, things are new, things are different, and that attracts people as well. If I go back on the exploration side, whilst we were sort of building Gruyere, on the exploration side, we moved our rosters to a more family-friendly roster. We used to do 14 days on, 7 days off rosters. We moved to the 8 days on, 6 days off. Our Gruyere mining operations now operate again, sort of family-friendly rosters with the 8 and 6, and some of our contract partners doing a 14-day, 7-day roster. Obviously, when people are away from home, it's around connection back to home. So it's around the communications capability that is, you know, made available to employees and contractors to be able to keep in touch with their loved ones, FaceTiming their kids, reading them a story at night, saying good night. You know, trying to, you know, bring some of the things that they would usually do. Yes, it's different, but, you know, what steps can we make to make it different but effective, or as effective as it can be when you've got a parent or a loved one working away. Facilities that people actually want to go away to, if you've got to go away and be away from family, you want to make sure that you're staying in a nice place. So, you know, en-suited rooms, trying to maintain that neighbourhood sort of feel. So, you know, wherever possible, as recently came out in the Mental Health FIFO Workforce Studies, was the social connection from a neighbourhood perspective where workers, it's more effective to have them in the same room or similar area from a social connection perspective of the camp. We try and maintain that where we can. Access to gym to maintain health and wellbeing, other sporting facilities, you know, other effective and attractive messing facilities. At Yamana, we employ our own chefs, and both chefs come from five-star hotel backgrounds. We deliberately moved to employing chefs on our payroll for a particular reason, in that you know, sense of commitment to the well-being of our people. And it's really pleasing.
Fabulous. Has it been well received?
It is well received. The food is fantastic. I mean, Chef Key and Chef Richard, certainly at Yamana, do a great job. And, you know, they're doing a great job where, you know, I can go. I went to a barbecue once, and people, you know, say, you know, well, what do you do? Oh, mining. Oh, who for? Gold Road. And then the next thing is, oh, are you the company that employs your own chefs?
Oh, really?
You know, don't worry about the fact that we've just built a gold mine here or this, that, or the other, or share price is this. It's, you know, you're that
company. How good's the food? Yeah.
Their own chefs. Yeah, so it does go a long way, and, you know, it makes a big difference. You know, we get a lot of visitors there, and one of the things they compliment very, very consistently is the food at Yamana. And at Gruyere, obviously it's a larger operation. We've chosen to partner with ESS as the catering and camp services provider there, and they provide the food and messing and cleaning and airport services there. I think that's another big one, touching on airport and airline, is people want a reliable service. If they're working away from home and they're doing rosters, you want a reliable airline provider. In my time flying in, flying out, and you know, when I first started, they were 4 week on, 1 week off rosters, and then 3-in-1, and then sort of moved to more family friendly as time went on. But one of the last things that you wanted was at the end of a swing, especially the longer ones, is being stuck at the airport for several hours because a plane was late or had a serviceability issue and sort of delayed you getting home. I mean, there was a time when I was, you count on one hand how many times you actually got home on time in a year, right, as opposed to not. So we've partnered with Virgin from both Gruyere and Jumana to provide us with effective aviation services.
Getting home safe and getting home on time, they're things that would be really high up on people's work satisfaction, particularly as the end of a swing. But I told you I was going to put a pause on mental health, and that probably was a nice segue to get into that, because we know that the COVID-19 pandemic has had some pretty major impacts and some risks really associated with psychological safety and the domestic and international border closures. You touched on them before. So how has the Gold Road workforce gone, and what sort of things have you and the leadership team at Gold Road really thought about and put into place in terms of the risks, but also what you've been hearing and seeing from your people in terms of their resilience and their ability to manage their mental health through this year?
Just before we talk about this year, it's important to sort of talk about industry as a whole. You know, there's been obviously a number of research projects and quite a focus on mental health in the mining and resources industry, specifically around FIFO. So we were very fortunate that a lot of companies had this the front of their mind and had made quite good progress into their implementation and action plans to improve mental health support in mining and resources and FIFO prior to COVID-19 sort of hitting us. You know, I think, you know, a lot of them were transitioning or had, you know, long transition to more family friendly rosters. In COVID-19, a lot of our resource counterparts, including Gold Road, from a health and wellbeing risk management perspective, we did go back to longer rosters. We went to even pretty much an even time longer roster.
Right.
We moved from 8-6 for our Jumana operations and Gruyere operations to almost like a 2-1 or a 15-13 roster, where crews were separated and segregated, so there were no more sort of handover days or handover time.
Crossovers.
You know, you'd see each other at the airport from a appropriate physical distance area for incoming and outgoing passengers for aircraft. Non-essential or non-critical roles were relocated or assigned to Perth to work virtually, so they were not FIFO for that particular period. And, you know, that these are things which are difficult for, you know, it was a whole heap of uncertainty for people. You know, the brain craved certainty, and it was around, well, what do we know about this ever-changing space? And things were changing on an hourly basis at one point, where new information was sort of coming out. Gold Road, in the early days, back in January and February, we had some of our staff traveling overseas to an international conference. And, you know, I remember contacting the conference coordinator and sort of asking what their threat assessment was for COVID-19, what mitigation strategies they were going to put in place or were putting in place. And I got the response of, well, I think you're overreacting here, mate. You know, this is an issue that's not on this doorstep. You know, we were in constant communication sort of over the coming weeks and days, and it got to the stage where they were appreciating and expecting our phone calls rather than that initial one of like, and it was, you know, it was a bit of a work together. People did go to that conference, and we had certain things in place. I think they got some strange looks at the time, but they wouldn't have got strange looks if they went 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, because everyone was doing it. So I think you know, Gold Road moved early there. We set up our workforce to work virtually quite early on, so that when the formal work from home, our people were already working from home, and we'd actually got sit-stand desks, dual monitors, appropriate office equipment to our people at their homes prior to sort of the run on monitors and toilet paper that occurred in those early days. So that was good.
Beat the hoarders.
Yeah. And, you know, working closely with our partners, joint venture partners with Goldfields around, you know, they're the operator of Gruyere, but it's, you know, we share the same airstrip. So, you know, what are we going to do there with regards to physical distancing and support to our people? And how do we maintain social connection through these times? So communication was an absolute key. We had obviously, you know, everyone sort of was on Teams and Zoom, and we had leaders calling in for site pre-starts to maintain those connections with support services. We actually had some comments that in our employee engagement and culture survey that support services were more available and responsive during COVID-19 working from home than they were prior to, which was, good in some ways and concerning in others. Social connection around things like, you know, we've always done a variety of events such as push-up challenges, step timber, Gold Road Days Out, where we get our people and families together from a social connection perspective. We have to think about doing those differently. We, you know, the virtual Friday drinks, virtual quiz nights, push-ups were done sort of virtually and in isolation and you know, videos posted on our company Facebook site and things like that from that connection perspective when we didn't have much travel or any travel from corporate roles to site. Our mental health first aiders in, again, 2017, Gold Road was the first mining company and exploration company to achieve gold accreditation status with Mental Health First Aid Australia. So,
congratulations.
Large percentage of our workforce, thank you, are accredited in Mental Health First Aid, and it's, you know, we require all leaders to hold that qualification. So those skills were there to give more confidence and competence to our site leaders. We deliberately employed a health and safety professional in a corporate role last year who was a psychologist, you know, because of the support that we saw that we needed in that in the mental health and wellbeing space. And that person was instrumental, also an ex-Defence Force person, ex-Army, and instrumental in a lot of our mitigation strategies through COVID-19 response, including health and wellbeing checks of our people. Obviously, like everybody else, we started and commenced a variety of health and wellbeing checks at airports. We participated in FIFO Detect. But one of the things that I'm particularly proud of was our checking with people from a mental health perspective. And we did that on the questionnaires, both going into site and coming out from site, where people just had to rate where they were on the sort of mental health and wellbeing spectrum. And if certain results came in, personalised call from a member of our health and safety team to follow up. And that was really interesting to actually, you know, some companies were doing it going into site, but not necessarily going out. So that was a great thing that our team put in place. Another great thing was personal health and wellbeing checking calls with our leaders. All our site leaders received a one-on-one call from our superintendent of health, safety and risk to work through anything personally, as well as how they could support their team in that mental health and wellbeing space.
Fantastic. Everybody is so keen at the moment. I mean, AMA has a mental health and wellness advisory board, and one of the things that we're hearing from that group is the importance of just sharing what each other are doing. So you talked about when we first got started about hearing from others and being challenged on those sort of spaces. So thank you so much for sharing all of those experiences, because while some of them and a couple of them would be things that most people have thought of, there'll be things in there that people potentially haven't thought of. So that's wonderful. Good. Really specific question to wrap us up on, but with your background, I think it'd be a good one. What do you think are the behavioural and cultural traits that you see as good indicators or just general indicators in terms of a person's mental health?
From an individual perspective with mental health and wellbeing, it's the ability to, you know, we talked before about being curious.
Mm.
You can't be curious if you don't sort of take the time and space, I think, you know. So from an individual perspective, those individuals that can just disconnect and take or create the time and space to be curious with oneself and check in with oneself around and regularly at times, you know, and it's where am I at? And being aware that that could change depending on your situation personally, professionally, what's happening in the world, what's happening in your particular world is where are you at on that mental health and wellbeing spectrum and that health and wellbeing spectrum in general. We hear a lot through COVID-19 and before around resilience. I think resilience is the number one foundation for that successful trait and behavior. But I think, you know, it's everyone's different. Everyone's relative. I have a couple of personal things that I use that is applicable to me that would be totally different to others. And I go back to these three events and it helps me to keep things in perspective. I tend to utilize the Stockdale principle philosophy and practice that was put in place in prisoner of war camps. I think it was in Singapore, in Asia, in the Second World War, where when you're dealing with things that are difficult, you don't want to be too optimistic where you think it may be resolved quite quickly and you just keep getting those setbacks. It's around, well, okay, we're going through this now, COVID-19. Will it end? Yeah. Do I know when? No. So I'm not even going to put a time on it. I'm not even going to turn around and say it's end of 2021 or we'll be traveling again as a family at the end of 2022. I know things are going to get better at some stage in the future. What can I do now for me, my family, my team, my organization that's within my circle of control and keep it there? When you talk about behaviors and traits, if everybody could master that self-checking, where am I? And then that perspective piece around, okay, all right, it is going to get better. Not sure when, that's okay. What can I do in the meantime? And if things are not going well and I need support, where can I get them from? I think they're things that can help individuals, any industry, any situation, COVID-19 and beyond.
Yeah, any circumstance, such great insight. Thank you. And that really wraps us up, Stuart. I just want to thank you so much for sharing your experience and insights and letting us know what's happening with Gold Road. It's a really exciting time for your organisation.
Thank you, Tara. Thank you for having me.
Stuart gave us such fantastic insights on so many things, the physical and mental challenges of FIFO work and what Gold Road's doing in that space, the added challenges of COVID-19, changing mindsets as health and safety continues to evolve rapidly, and some really great insights around leadership and leadership development. I'm Tara Diamond, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Resource People Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.